I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Arnold Palmer is the Masters champion of 1960. He has birdied the last two holes to catch and then move ahead of Ken Venturi, one of the greatest displays of courageous golf that anybody has ever seen any place.
Up the hill.
Oh, did you ever see one like that? I think that's one of the greatest putts I've ever seen in my life.
Maybe. Yes, sir!
There it is! Can you believe it? Nick Faldo! There it is! A win for the ages!
Is it his time?
Yes!
Here it comes. Oh my goodness. Oh wow. In your life have you seen anything like that?
Hello, friends. I'm Jim Nantz. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to the Masters Tournament. I've heard it said before, it's a tradition unlike any other.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Brendan Porath from SB Nation, and we're going to break down the 2018 Masters. Brendan, welcome on.
Andy, good to be with you. It's always an honor and a pleasure, and pretty exciting week to break down here. Finally back in the D.C. area after a full week down south, and excited to chop it up.
Yeah, it was tough to get the scheduling in. You know, I felt like I needed to go through your agent that you don't have, and Smartin is on the golf course, so he will not be joining us today.
It's like the Monday media blitz that they send the winner up, you know, to New York. I saw Reed was doing all this stuff, went to the Knicks game, MSG. It's like that Monday after is just a little hectic. Got to do all the media blitz. So.
I just enjoyed sitting and only like really tweeting stuff and not really doing anything. It's the decompression is real on Monday after the Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You got to kind of start coming up for air right now, you know, back in the grind, taking kids to school and stuff like that. So,
with Reed, you were on the ground. What do you think about the 2018 Masters champion?
I think he's a deserving champion. There's been, the internet being the internet, there's been a backlash to Reed winning and then a backlash to that backlash. And then I think now we're at a backlash to the people criticizing Reed or saying Reed is a little different kind of champion. We'll just use the word different. So that's the way the internet works here. I don't know that I anticipated the kind of explosion of debate and drama around Pat Reed. But again, I think it's a reminder of the Masters being this broader kind of pop cultural moment, right? It's not, I mean, more so than the US Open, more so than all the other majors, obviously any PGA Tour event. It's this broader cultural moment, just like we talked about. The winner goes up to New York. He's on these late shows. He's, you know, the green jacket has, it's a different kind of brand. And, you know, that, I guess, the winner immediately goes in the crosshairs. And obviously the winner has some oddities about him and his family situation and his past. And I don't know that he and his family probably anticipated those crosshairs fully. I didn't, and I didn't kind of see this explosion coming. I don't know that we got it with Danny Willett. I mean, I guess the focus then was probably more on Jordan Spieth. But yeah, it's just a reminder of really how much the Masters resonates beyond just the golf world and, you know, the golf nerds like us that are on the internet all day, who know his story so well and are kind of like, yeah, we know that's a part of it, part of the package now. So yeah, it was really kind of interesting to see what's transpired here over the last 24 hours. Now that we're Tuesday, the week after,
I tweeted something about how Nance came in on the coverage and immediately said like great buddies about Spieth and Thomas, and I one of my followers tweeted back at me something about like, you know, the magnitude of the Masters and how you have millions of and it that kind of clicked with me. I was like, oh. That is so true, is that there are, you know, like I have a ton of buddies that don't really watch golf, aren't really into golf, but this week they watch the every minute of the telecast and they might not know that Spieth and Thomas are good buddies. So right. Like it is something, and I think that's a great point about Reed and his family situation is that we've known this for years, but not everybody else knew this. And, I think looking beyond the family thing, Reed deserved to win this. And I think you have to always applaud people in golf when they clearly improve on their deficiencies as a player. And I think that's the greater takeaway. If you look beyond his personal life as a player, there aren't a lot of guys that, you know, we saw Martin Keimer try and build his game for Augusta by trying to learn how to hit a draw off the tee, yep. And it like kind of killed him. You know, we've right. seen Luke Donald try and chase distance and that really set him back. But we see Patrick Reed like really learn how to hit different style golf shots than he's, you know, comfortable with. And that's pretty cool to see a guy that like clearly saw what his problem was and went and fixed it. And, you know, he's become a really way more complete player since he's been able to start to move that ball left to right. And it, I mean, it just opens up the golf course for him. And he's such a great putter, so good around the greens that if he can hit it at all kinds of flags and have some success, I think we're going to see more wins from him.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like that's kind of been obscured and all the drama about people figuring out, finding out who he is, his personality and his background is that like this guy, I mean, was this that unexpected? Was this like, you know, Zach Johnson or Trevor Immelman winning? I don't know that it is. I mean, we've seen this guy be like kind of a stone cold killer in some pretty big events. And he's had the pedigree since college and junior days. And like, of course, he's not as popular as Ricky and Spieth and Justin Thomas. And he doesn't have all those accomplishments either. I'd say he's got a better career than Ricky for sure right now. But like he's had the pedigree. He's, you know, worked to get better, obviously with finding new shots. And we saw the helicopter stuff all week again. And you know, I think that's kind of been lost, unfortunately, here in the washout the day after because of all the broader cultural debate, pop culture debates about who he is and what's off and on limits. This guy is like just nails. He's an incredible golfer. He, you know, chips in for eagle when he needs to. He makes putts when he needs to. He gets maybe caught a break or two, but every Masters winner catches a break or two. And he beat Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and Rory McIlroy. Like this wasn't like, you know, just kind of cruising in. He shot 71, his highest round of the week. But I think if you ask a lot of people on Sunday morning, they thought it'd be over par. They thought it'd be higher. But he made putts in the biggest moments, whether that was Saturday afternoon when Rory was kind of losing his mind a group ahead and shooting 65. And then again, Sunday at the very end on 17 and 18, with Ricky pushing him and knowing that Spieth had pushed him. So, like, I think we lose sight of the fact that, like, the guy has been really one of the best golfers in the world now for years. And this wasn't, like, that surprising, even if it wasn't as palatable as people wanted it to be.
You know, the putts at 12 and 14 were just massive. And yeah. I think what gets lost is kind of what you said, is that this guy's been a great player. And a year ago, the story was like, why can't Patrick Reed play in majors? And sure. And now we're like shocked, you know, the general public shocked that he won this. He's a world-class player. And he's got now 6 titles on his career. He's 27. He's got a WGC. He's got a FedEx Cup win. And yep. He's got a major. And it used to be when you hit 27 that you were just, you know, kind of getting into your prime. And now the way that golf has shifted, it's almost that now is 25 your prime. But I really think that this generation, there's so many good young players that we're going to see a renaissance of like the 32 to 35 year old prime. It's just, you know, it's just taking time for these guys to develop into those players.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we could probably maybe say the same for Rick. But I mean, Rick has all the kind of the popularity and notoriety and brand endorsing stuff. So we know all about him and assume he's already, you know, one of the best in the world or a major winner, you know, has of that same class, you know, big three, big four, all that stuff. But, you know, maybe he is as well, just kind of coming into it. I don't know. I think like Reed has kind of at every stage shown us that he belongs in that kind of that upper class conversation, and isn't really a one hit wonder or a fleeting thing. Now he gets lost sometimes and you don't hear from him for a couple months, but you kind of can count on him season in and season out here through the first, whatever, 6 years of his career, however, 4 or 5 years of his career, to at least make some noise every single season. And I think there's something to be said for being able to do that. And this win was not that big a surprise. Obviously, like, he's a weird dude. And talking to him, you don't get very far, and it's a little icy. But, you know, if we just want to talk about the golf, I don't think it's that surprising.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been an elite player from inside 125 yards. He's one of the best around the greens. He's a great putter. And I think where you've seen him go silent for a little while is the ball striking is not always there. But when it's there, there's few. I mean, he's one of the 5 best players in the world. Because yeah. He's so good around the greens. I mean, it getting it in the hole, and especially on we saw it in a major championship Sunday. You know, things don't always go right, and that's where you need to have that game inside 125 to really take advantage of when you get opportunities, and also recover from, you know, the bad shots, the shaky shots you hit when you're not, you know, feeling as comfortable as you did the rest of the week leading up to it.
Yeah, I've read, I think like Ryan Lavner of Golf Channel talked to Josh Gregory, his former college coach and now performance coach, whatever that means. But, you know, he's obviously like sharp guy with talents. And he mentioned like obviously Reed has some deficiencies, but he's like, if he keeps it between the pines off the tee, like, look out, you know, like his ball striking isn't always the sharpest, but it's a matter of just keeping that slinging draw, you know, between the pines and it's, you know, look out. He's going to contend as long as that if when he catches a week like that, and we saw it.
So let's talk about Rick. You touched on him. What do you take away from Ricky Fowler's performance? Obviously another runner-up, another top 5 in a major. He's 29, and What is Ricky Fowler going to get a major?
Oh yeah, I think he's going to get a major for sure. I thought this was a different kind of contention for him. Going 67, 60 or 65, 67 on the weekend. I mean, come on, that's worthy of praise, even if he came up one shot short with a birdie on the 18th. I thought this was like, I also think this was like the perfect spot for Ricky. Like all of Sunday was about Reed and Rory, that, you know, we're going to get this like match play thing in the last group. And then it turned to Spieth, and like, we're getting the greatest final round in major championship history and the greatest comeback ever. And Ricky was just kind of there in between those two, slowly plodding along. Then he hit the back nine and what, he shoot 32 coming in. That's kind of like the perfect spot for Ricky to get a major, in my opinion, at this stage of his career. Maybe that changes later. Like, I don't know if he wants to be the guy one or two up going into Sunday or playing with Reed in that final Sunday pairing right now. And he admitted that after the round, he was pretty candid. It was kind of a different kind of Ricky. We've seen him on, you know, he was in tears for all intents and purposes at 2014 at Valhalla, right? He was choked up talking about how, like, he was close, you know, top five every major that year. He was, you know, emotional after losing again to Rory and feeling like, you know, his day would come. It's going to come. But this time he was like, this is the first, this Sunday, he was like, this is the first major I really, really felt comfortable in. And I thought that was pretty candid. And we don't always get that from Ricky, obviously. He's usually pretty straightforward. Like, I hit good shots, it wasn't there today, that kind of stuff. It's always very cliche and nebulous. But he said, you know, I really felt comfortable. It's the first major Sunday I really felt comfortable. And I think that was kind of the spot for him, kind of in between the Spieth and then the Reed Rory show. And then all of a sudden, it's the 18th hole and he's one shot off the lead. So at least that was the sense you get on the grounds. You don't get as holistic a view watching on TV because everyone's darting back and forth between Reed and then the Spieth run. And then all of a sudden, Ricky was there. So I think that was like the ideal spot for him to really make his run towards the board. And I think one of these days, obviously, it's going to happen. There are so many kind of just minuscule bounces that have prevented him from winning a major. And if he keeps putting himself in position, he's going to get one.
Yeah, I think he's become so much more of a patient player over the years. And I think what I look at is last year, Fowler was essentially in the exact same position on Sunday. He shot even par he was in the second to last group, you know, well within striking distance, just like this year. He shot even par on the front nine last year. This year he shot one under. And then the back nine, you could tell he pressed. And it's the worst thing you can do at Augusta National is the birdies are out there, but you can't push it. Yeah. And he shot 40 on the back nine last year. This year he shoots 32. He really let the course come to him and let the moment come to him by just executing on his game plan. But then you look, he finished one shot out of the lead, and it's a testament to the major championships of having your game plan and sticking to it. Because I keep going back in my head, you know, on 13 on Saturday, he goes for the green from a bad lie with a fairway wood in the right rough with that back pin. And I get it. Like, if that fairway wood carries up to the front of the green, it runs right back to that back pin. Right. He could make an eagle, but if he just lays it up, it's such an easy up and down. And he got it up and down for par, essentially where he could have laid the ball up to. And he makes birdie and he's in a playoff. Like, it's crazy to me how narrow the margin for winning is. And it, the one moment where Ricky really pushed and was tried to get, make something happen in the whole tournament, he doesn't get the good break, and that's the difference between winning and coming in second, or, you know, playoff in second.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The balance there is so, I mean, that's kind of what makes golf you know, so great is when do you try to push down, at what day, at what position on the leaderboard, and do you at all? I think because Ricky, he caught some crap last year, and I thought rightfully so for the way he played that last round of the U.S. Open, or you know, with he really hung back and never kind of tried to get aggressive as Koepka took the lead. Now, would it have mattered? Probably not, the way Koepka played, and Ricky said as much, but he played extremely conservative golf for being in contention on Sunday at a major and needing to close a gap between him and the leader. And he was conservative, definitely, at the PGA, stuck to his game plan. Like you said, I remember following him a couple days, and he was with Rory and different players, and Ricky was the one hitting not driver off every off the most tee boxes, whether it was a driving iron or a three wood or hybrid on a lawn and wet course. It was always Ricky kind of had his game plan. He was playing pretty conservative golf. He never, it's like an incredible balance there with when and where you make a move, or do you make a move, or do you change your game plan at all? And I think you kind of make the point at Augusta, you can't do that or you're screwed. And Rory made that same case this week. He's like, I've tried to learn just to be patient. That's the biggest problem I've had here is thinking, you know, because there's birdie chances out there, I need to shoot a 64 and I need to eagle or birdie every, you know, par five and then pick up birdies at three and wherever else. And that's been my problem is because the margin there between, you know, screwing yourself by getting too aggressive and needing to shoot a low number is kind of what makes golf so great.
Yeah, I think Jeff Ogilvie said something to me once. He said, Augusta's great because if I want to shoot 72, I can do it every single time. But the second I try and shoot 66, I shoot 76.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect way to capture it. I mean, what do you think of this seems to be Ricky's approach. This is always, and I think it's worth applauding that he's not going to change his game plan. Him and Skavron just stick to what they do all week, whether it's Sunday, late Sunday, or, you know, early Thursday. And I think like he had one stretch this week where he had three putts, I think in nine holes, or maybe it was a round, and right there, you know, clean that up and you're winning by two shots. So
I wonder how many major champions have taken a penalty stroke.
It's a good question. I'm trying to think.
But I mean, Ricky last year at the PGA, he had that triple bogey in the first round.
Yep.
And that's the difference. It's just, to me, it seems like it's just, you know, it's getting to the point where it's just one moment you can almost zero in on every single major with him. And I think he's going to win. He's so close so often. I hate the parallels with Phil, but I mean, the number of top five finishes in majors is unbelievable. I had it in the newsletter. I forgot exactly what it was, but I think it's
eight.
Yeah.
I think it's eight already. And
with three or four second place finishes.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's not all top fives are created equal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he just keeps giving himself chances. He's going to win one. What do you think best suits his game, or is it just kind of it's suitable at multiple?
That's the great thing about Fowler is that he's shown he can play at every type of major championship venue, and he's got that all around game. It's you look at it and you look at different guys on tour, and his game isn't. And we just talked about it with Reed. If he hits the ball well, he's going to do well. But like Ricky is a world-class ball striker, world-class short game, world-class with wedges, and he's a top 10 putter in the world. So it's not like he doesn't have it. Everywhere should fit his game well. You look at Shinnecock, that should fit him well. Carnoustie, I mean, the Carnoustie in the Open Championship, half of it's about catching the right side of the draw. So you know, all of a sudden that field can be shrunk by 50%. And then the PGA Championship at Belle Reve, I mean, that should be a good spot for him too. It's going to be wet. It's going to be soft. It's going to be long, and it's going to be tough. But the softness of the golf course should, you know, have a lot of, it'll be way different than the three courses leading up to Belt Reef. It'll be more of a, I think it'll be more like a course you see week in, week out on PGA Tour.
Yeah, right. No, I from everything I hear and read and talk to you about, it sounds like that's the case. So yeah, I think, you know, just what we talked about, because he's so adaptable and so good through the bag, you know, maybe the best sand player in the world, top 10 putter, all these things, you know, it's hard not to see him picking up one because he adapts to all four kinds of styles. And we know for a fact he can contend at Augusta. There's nothing at Augusta that's blocking him out or, you know, psyching him out. He knows he can play that course.
Yeah. I think also you just look at his career and he's getting better.
Right.
And I think.
I mean, yeah, no, that's definitely the case.
He's more consistent than ever. I mean, last year he had the lowest missed cuts in his career. He had a boatload of top 10 finishes. I think he's getting better every year. It's not like we're talking about a guy that has stopped progressing as a player. But what's crazy, I talked about the margin for winning and losing, and you look at Jordan Spieth hitting the tree on 18 twice, essentially like a one shot penalty twice, and he misses the playoff by two shots.
Right.
So, I mean, what do you take away from Spieth's week?
Oh, it was just, I mean, obviously the round is incredible. Sunday was so fun to watch, but what I took away is just like frustration about what could have been. And that's golf, right? That's like me walking off the course saying, oh, if I had just, you know, I burned the edge on this hole and I, you know, duffed this one, like I could have shot, you know, three strokes better. That's everybody, whether it's you're the best in the world or some chop. But yeah, my main takeaway is just how close we were, and thinking back on, you know, he's close at 14 and the eagle putt at 13. I don't know, 18. The one earlier in the week, like that was a yank, right? He like yanked that into that like bathroom area and all those bushes down on the left. I thought on Sunday it was just like a slight pull and it just clipped like one little overhanging branch, and he was kind of incredulous, couldn't believe it happened. You know, I don't know that was a bad swing, or the ball was kind of destined for doom like the one earlier in the week. That was just a slight pull that clipped an overhanging branch.
Yeah, that was not a bad shot. I mean, if that ball cuts back, I can't imagine it being more than a couple yards into the rough. It might even be in the fairway. And
yeah, I thought it was going just for the, you know, the usual landing spot in front of the bunkers, kind of coming back.
And you look at the way he played going into that, like he hadn't missed a shot since, I mean, God,
I don't know that. Yeah,
you're like, every drive was a quick tee pick up. Every approach shot he was like staring down. I mean, the one on 16, I think, in No Laying Ups podcast with Bones, Bones talked about the adrenaline, and I think Spieth, they took the less club because of the adrenaline, and it just came up short.
Right.
And I think, but I mean, he ended up making the putt. But like, you know, like this guy was locked in, you know, every shot was like right on line, right number. Like he was, it's just so crazy to see a tee shot that happens to, you know?
Yeah, I think like, so yeah, what I walk away from is just what could have been a little bit of frustration, but the way golf works is like 16 was gravy. You know that, I mean, how often does that one go in? So you kind of, that's just the push and pull and the give and take of major golf or any golf. So, but again, I walked away feeling like grateful to have seen it. I peeled off at seven from Reed and Rory and kind of raced down with a couple guys, Kevin Van Valkenburg of ESPN. We raced down to 11 and kind of watched him in from the approach shot on 11 all the way in. And it was kind of, I was grateful to have seen it, but also like, oh, what could have been if he just, you know, had the one on 13 had fallen in, or 18 had fallen. It just, it would have been amazing to see him shoot 63, maybe even 62 and chase down Reed. But again, like, it's hard to, I saw him that morning. He was like, had this forced march, like head down. I was up at the clubhouse and he just like zoomed past everyone. Didn't look at anybody. Didn't want to talk to anybody. Zoomed past into the clubhouse. And I heard Jeff Shackelford say he talked to Danzy. Danzy was like, I've never seen him like this before around. I just think like it was more evidence that we're going to get Spieth contending, if not every year at Augusta, like 3 out of 4 years. And maybe he won't shoot 64 every time, but he's going to have like a mid-60s round in there somewhere, you know, and maybe that gets him a top 10. But it's his horse for course. He's going to be doing it for the next 20 years.
How many green jackets do you think he gets on his career?
Oh, gosh.
He's 24, so he'll be 25 next year.
Let's talk about how he could have four, right? Or three, you know, 2014 wasn't that close. But again, that's what the Masters is. It could be four, or he could have shot 62, but it wasn't. You know, I think like it's hard to get a green jacket. So I think just based on the fact that he's come close four of the last 5 years, doesn't mean he's going to win five green jackets. You know, I think he gets three. I think that's probably on the low side, most people would say.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, I'd probably set the over under at 3.5. I mean, just the way he plays the golf course, I can't foresee him not joining the four jacket club, you know?
Yeah, I know. That seems to be like the conventional wisdom now, which is a pretty amazing club though, right? I mean, it's just Arnie, Jack, and Tiger. It's hard to get there, even if you are always finishing. I mean, we saw Phil, like 2000 to 2010, I don't think he finished outside the top 10. He got three green jackets out of it. So I think like it's it's easy to it's not easy, but you know, finishing in the top 5 and the top 10 is a little different than you need to be lucky. You need to be fortunate to also win.
Yeah. I mean, Reed got some really good breaks with the ball on 13, hitting the flag on 17. You know, you don't win a major championship without good breaks. And you know, there's usually, unless you just run away. I mean, we saw Spieth run away. I mean, Koepka, sure, I feel like, won at Erin Hills without good breaks. But for the most part, you got to have some things go your way. And I mean, Spieth, 66 in the first round, 64 in the last round. It's what's crazy to me is that on the day everybody took advantage of the course, he just couldn't get it going. I think it almost the weather might have been detrimental to the way Spieth plays Augusta.
Sure.
How did the golf course seem to change from Friday to Saturday to Sunday? From my lens, it seemed like on Sunday there just wasn't a lot of fire in it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, Saturday was just cold and rainy. You know, it went from misting to kind of a light rain, and then you know you didn't see the sun the entire day. Sunday was chilly, but you know, yeah, it had softened a bit. Like it did not have that firmness, I think, that you always expect with Augusta. Mm-hmm. There was a 64 out there and a couple rounds of what Cam Smith shot. Sick. Yeah, 67. So yeah, I don't know that it had that kind of that challenge on the approach shots into the green. But you know, that's not always how it falls at Augusta. So
Yeah, it seemed like the aprons were just kind of slow too. Like the balls weren't rolling off the greens like they would. It's
what happened with Reed's ball that just stuck on the bank, right? At 13.
Yeah. I mean,
it chunked it.
It was like a little rough there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's been. I was really surprised. Like, I don't remember there being rough there. Like, which it's kind of. I mean, how is that bank not shaved and every other bank is shaved?
Right, right. Like, but what you, yeah.
You know, that was crazy to me. Is like how is that bank not shaved? And when 15, we watched Sergio put four wedge shots into the water there.
right. Yeah, it makes sense on a par five where going for it is no longer this momentous decision, as Ridley talked about, that maybe that green contour just makes it so you, but if 15 has it shaved, yeah, you're right. I mean, why would 13 have that kind of extra firewall there?
Yeah.
I don't know. What you said is true for sure. The balls, some of the balls you expect to kind of run out 10, 20 yards back down the fairway or over the back were kind of sticking closer to the, you know, the apron of the green. So
Something I'm kind of surprised with all the money Augusta has and their love to tinker, but I think it would require a change in their philosophy is like how they haven't sand capped the fairways of the golf course, you know, where they could essentially have a course that if it rained, it still played firm and fast. But obviously with the way they mow the fairways, and Tiger alluded to it a lot in his book, they want right. the course to play longer. But I think if it played firmer and faster in the fairways, it would just be a better test because it would separate the guys that are really on their game and being extremely precise more and more.
Yeah, you mentioned that when we were walking around down there on Wednesday at Sandcap, and it, I think there's obviously a lot of merit to that. And someone mentioned Rory. You know, we always hear about Rory, rainy conditions. Like, if you have to tweet about it, if it happens, if it rains and Rory's in contention, you're mandatory. You're required by law to tweet about how there's Rory conditions now. But I think, you know, he felt like he could just kind of grip it and rip it this week a lot more or more often than, you know, we see the deficiencies in his game, whether it's wedge play or being, you know, being precise is what. Precise with his wedges, like you talked about, when it's firm and fast, you know, he didn't always have to do that this week.
Mm-hmm. He's such a good player with his irons and his long game's so good. You have to believe that the fact that the ball and technology and everything that goes into this insane distance game that we've had has actually hindered his career, because he's the best long iron player on tour and mid iron player on tour, and he just doesn't really have to hit a lot of them. Nobody has to hit a lot of them anymore.
Yeah, his shot on two was incredible. From a, you know, two is not an even lie.
Yeah,
you know?
Downhill lie.
Yeah,
side hill lie.
Yep, he was on the left half of the left side of the fairway, tucked. And then the pin's obviously back right on Sunday, every Sunday. So he just dropped it right in. That's not a short iron shot, you know. Maybe it's not.
What did he hit? You know, I think he hit a 7-iron. But that's a mid-iron.
Yeah, at this point. It's not, yeah.
It's a DJ only hit one shot more than a 6-iron into a par 4, or more than a 7-iron into a par 4 last year.
So. All last year. Yeah, so it's not hitting a 4-iron, but. You know, he is that on those par fives, such an incredible ball striker.
Yeah, it's what about Jon Rahm? Best major finish. Kinda got out of his good mood in the back the last few holes, but I mean this guy's gonna win majors. And I think Augusta is a perfect place for him.
Yeah, I think like the patience thing you talked about earlier and learning to get better, progressing, like with Ricky, you know, I think that's going to happen with Rahm, but just faster. You know, he's not going to be 29 like Rick. There's just a lot of moments where, you know, whether it was Friday or Saturday, I watched him for a while on Friday, and it's just sloppy, right? Sloppy with his wet. He's an incredible short game player. Most people just associate with him with being like this big burly guy who smashes the ball, but I love to watch him with his wedges and putter. And there was just some sloppy shots where there was nine, just not getting it to the right level. And I think that's all going to change as he plays the course more, you know, understanding how to miss and where to miss, certainly with your approach shots and with your wedges. But again, he was, for being on the ground, you know, you got, what is he, a number three player in the world? It was just kind of, he was just kind of lurking there with Ricky, and everyone was focused on Reed and Rory at the start and then Speed, you know, for the end. So, yeah, he had a nice little spot there, just kind of lurking around and not being the focus of the show. But you get my, what do you go, 68, 65, 69.
Yeah, 75. He's gonna win there. Yeah, it, I mean, that 15th hole is where it kind of unraveled. He hit that iron shot. He was a yard from being absolutely perfect on that.
Right.
And he found the water. But, I mean, that if he would have hit that close, it would have been really reminiscent of Sergio's eagle the year before. Because he, I mean, it was right at the flag and literally 1 yard from perfection. And, you know, he gets an eagle there and all of a sudden it's, you know, a three-shot swing. And we're talking about John Rahm as a... you know, the guy that might have won, you know, it's a, but then in the, on the flip side, it, he, I mean, if he gets that up and down, he, I mean, you, that's the thing with Rahm is his patience and maturity on the course need to get a little better. Cause it just doesn't seem like, you know, I'm okay with these guys getting mad and you can get mad, like, and get it out. But with Rahm, it just seems to stick with him. Like one bad thing. And like, it just like, the rest of his round or like for like a six hole stretch, he's just out of the, you know, he's in another world and that can't happen in major championships.
I saw him at 17 on Sunday on the green. He took his fist and just like pounded it into the turf. Like a, you know, a pitcher going back and like breaking the phone box or, you know, punching his locker and then breaking his hand and being out for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, he like pounded the turf. Saw him on Friday take his club and wind up to slam it into his bag. Saw him toss his club, not like throw it in anger, but launch it at his bag on 18 on Friday. He's definitely like, he gets on tilt there, and that's not a place you can do that.
Yeah, it with the same thing with Reed, is like these guys when they make, like I was an idiot when I was 22 and 23, like...
Yeah, of course. Right. I'm still an idiot.
Yeah. You know? I'm just not one that people watch every move. So
he did get asked about Seve and Sergio. It's like required. And Jose. Like it's just mandatory. He was asked Saturday night, like, what do Seve and Sergio mean to you? What did you take from them? It's like just because he's from Spain doesn't mean, you know, he has their game or he, you know, I get it's such an easy kind of cliche and facile narrative to apply to him. But I remember at the Players last year, it's like, oh, were you, you know, they made it sound like Sergio had like rocked him from the cradle and brought him all the way up. He's like, no, I never really met Sergio until I came to the States, you know, went to Arizona State. You know, it's not, he's like, the guy, the questioner obviously wanted him to say, you know, they were like hitting balls on the beach together back in Spain when they were, you know, little kids. Sergio was showing him how to play golf. But it's like, no, I never met Sergio and until, you know, I was, you know, almost 20. But that gets frustrating. Obviously, being on the grounds is just always getting the same kind of question.
So we're like 50 minutes in and we haven't talked about Tiger and Phil.
Who?
It, you know, the big lead up, and obviously it is slightly disappointing not to see one of them in the mix. But from my standpoint, just having Tiger playing and making the cut and being relevant is a big win at this point.
Yeah, I mean, shot 69 on Sunday. He made the cut. You know, by one, I think we got lost kind of in the hysteria of playing those flat Florida courses and assuming, you know, we've seen him show up. And I count myself guilty for this. Like we've seen him show up in 2010 after being in hiding for 6 months. And we saw him show up in 2015 after being hiding in 2 months, trying to figure out a chip, like, and just assumed he would contend or not contend, but, you know, be top 10, top 15. And, you know, he's 42 now. He's not that golfer, and he hasn't played really in two years. So, yeah, I got caught up in that. You know, this is not, you know, some flat Bay Hill course. And he made the cut. I think we need to kind of always shift our expectations, and maybe that Florida swing got us a little off kilter. And making the cut after not playing it since 2015 is an accomplishment. It is. And it was just good to have him there. And you know, I wish, you know, we could have seen him more. But the Masters is that kind of event. The Masters is bigger than Tiger. Obviously, Tiger completely changes the dynamic. But if Tiger's playing early Sunday at the Valspar, that's like the most important part of the Valspar, right? For the larger golf, or for the larger sports world. But you know, if Tiger's playing early Sunday at the Masters, it's still the Masters, and we're going to care more about what's happening from, you know, 3 to 7 o'clock than what, how, you know, every shot of Tiger's early Sunday round. So he got, you know, a little lost in the shuffle, but it was just good to have him there on the weekend.
Yeah, I think that the difference, I think he just wasn't comfortable. You saw it take time for him to get his competitive chops back and on a regular PGA Tour event. And I think it's the same thing with majors. Like, you know, major championship golf is different than week in, week out PGA Tour golf. And it's just something he hadn't done in a while. And I think that getting comfortable again in major championship golf is just the difference. It's a different level of play, and it requires a little, it just feels different. And I think he just was really sloppy early in the week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, people talk about the par fives, and that was kind of the thing I expected to be there for him this week, was that ball striking, and it wasn't. You know, he put himself in good spots several times on whether it was 2 or 8, and just kind of, you know, yanked these, you know, pretty moderate approach shots that we were talking about. The ball striking just wasn't there. But going back to the major thing, I think the injuries and all that's happened kind of obscure that he wasn't the best on the weekend at majors before he got hurt, right? I mean, we saw like kind of in 2012 and 2013, whether it was Muirfield or Hill, he wasn't, I mean, things changed for him on the weekend of the major. And I don't know if that goes back to 2009, since, you know, everyone kind of got a glimpse into his personal life, and that whole kind of the veneer fell and crumbled all around him. But like, he was a different player on the weekend at majors in 2012 and 2013. And he did get sloppy and wasn't as sharp. And, you know, obviously we're now 5 years removed with a ton of stuff that's happened. But I think that might get lost in the shuffle of just saying, well, he's been hurt and he's got to get back to playing like he did, you know, when he didn't have, before all the back trouble. So I don't know, that may be like a lingering longer issue than simply just coming back from back surgery.
It's tricky. You know, he's the greatest player, you know, most dominant player of all time. You know, people always argue about the greatest, but, and it's hard to accept it if he's a different player now, because we all remember what he was once was. But it's, you know, I think it's a matter of time. I think he will, assuming he can stay healthy the next 3 to 5 years, I think we'll see him on a Masters Sunday in contention.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I think there's no doubt about that. I think he's going to have a late Sunday tee time. Somewhere in the next 3 to 5 years, as long as he's playing.
I mean, his short game is absolutely insane. Like, he's got shots. Like, he hit a flop shot on 8 over the giant mound from the left that just like stopped on a dime. And you sit back and you're like, who has that shot? Like, does anybody really have that shot other than Tiger? And I don't think they necessarily do. Phil, you probably could make an argument, but I mean, the game is coming back. It's just, you take 2 years, you know, essentially like really 4 years off.
Yeah.
And he's going to have some rust. So anybody that disappointed, surprised this week for you?
You know who surprised me is Henrik Stenson. The guy's been pretty garbage at Augusta, and
shockingly bad though.
Yeah. I guess shockingly bad. But I just, and he's not been that good this year except for Bay Hill. And he finished T5 and was kind of always lurking. Didn't have that. You know, mid 60s, 67 type round that put him in the conversation with Fowler and Reed and Spieth. But, you know, he had four rounds in the red and finished T5. So I thought that was kind of a surprise. I don't know who disappointed. I guess Dustin Johnson finished T10, but I just felt like he was never in it. I guess we get spoiled by DJ, you know, eagling every par five and past Masters that, you know, you want that again and you want another 66 with three or four eagles on the card. It's not that easy to do. I thought DJ was kind of coming in without a lot of fanfare and would at least be more in the conversation on Sunday. But that said, like a bad week or a quiet week, I guess. Not bad. A quiet week for DJ was T10. So,
yeah. Cam Smith is one that jumps out to me. 24 years old. And now he's got his second top five in a major. You know, he finished, I think, T3rd at Chambers Bay and now T5th at Augusta National. I think he's going to be a star. He got his first individual win at the Aussie Open this year, and or was it the Aussie PGA?
I think it's PGA.
Aussie PGA. He won that Zurich, but his kid's nails. I think he's he's got the type of game that's going to thrive at major championships, and he might be. You know, everybody looks at, you know, the different, you know, next Aussie guy, and he's going to be one of them. I mean, there's always this pipeline of great Aussie players.
I talked to some Aussie guys about him. I have just like a connection to him because he played with my dad in Cleveland at the Webb event. So I'm kind of like a fan, just random fan. But I talked to some Aussie guys, and I've talked to his coach and stuff in the past, and like they worry about him like he's just a chiller. Like he's the very opposite of Reed. Like he would be fine if he didn't have this incredible golf talent. He'd be fine just like working at a bar or a pub with his buddies back in Australia. And I heard like when he got that T5 in Chambers, he just kind of like was like, oh, that was cool. And went and now I've got some job security. And he kind of went home and just hung out in Australia. I heard like before the Masters, he was just kind of screwing around and with his friends in Ponte Vedra. I'm not saying like he's being irresponsible or anything. He's just kind of hanging out, chilling. Like he's the very opposite of Reed. That may work better for him than being Reed. But
it like goes back to what somebody said is like you either got to be like super smart, like Phil, like where you're so analytical, or you have to be on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, like DJ, to be a really great golfer. It's like being in the middle is like the worst shot you can be.
I think he just kind of strolls up to the golf course and he's got so much talent and he's like, that's the way he plays. He doesn't need to be grinding or worrying about every contour. He's got it enough talent to finish T5 in the Masters. So.
I was a little disappointed with Rose and Casey. You know, those guys, you see Casey shoot 69, 65 on the weekend, and it's like, man, what was it? But I think he went in with more expectations than ever before. I mean, I forgot who on Golf Channel picked him, you know, and live from.
Yeah.
But
what's going on with Peters? 78 MC.
Yeah, he's young, you know.
He's not been playing well all year.
Yeah, he's been a little off. I think, you know, like anything. I mean, the crazy thing is like you think about like the Ryder Cup and like with all these guys, these Euros, like he might not make the team this year, but I think he'll he'll get it together. He's going to be a really good player, I think, still. And I think, you know, like his skill set, but like it just shows you can have a game that's built for Augusta, but you still got to play well. It's not like you can show up and not have your best stuff and contend.
So I got a question. We were talking about Tiger and Phil. Do you think Phil's going to win another Masters?
I don't know.
It's not been that great since 2012. He had the T2 in 2015, but that was Jordan Spieth was like 5-6 shots ahead the whole time, and he kind of came back and caught Rose to finish T2. And since then, it's not been that great. I mean, he hadn't shot below 70 until this Sunday for like 2 or 3 years. He hadn't broken 70. We so often hear like, oh, he's going to win in his 50s. He's going to contend into his 60s. It's not been that great since 2012.
Yeah, if you look at where he won too, he won at Chapultepec, which isn't really it's not a premier golf course. I think when you look down the list, like, would you rather, you know, like Mark Leishman or Phil, year in, year out at Augusta, who would you take from now, like going forward?
Probably Leishman.
So like Leishman, what is he, probably 15 on your list of potential winners?
Yeah.
10 to 15?
I mean, we know he's got a proven track record of shooting low rounds there. Yeah.
Would you pick at this point Tommy Fleetwood or Phil Mickelson for the next 5 years at Augusta?
That's a good one. Probably Fleetwood. Yeah.
So like you start to go down the list and you're like, whoa, like, you know, like he's fallen down, and you haven't even talked about like a guy like Tony Finau who finished T10 in his first Masters with a dislocated ankle. I mean, like I put Finau in my sleepers thing because like his game is just, it screams Augusta National. He's world class. Like obviously everybody goes, he's the longest player on tour, but he's like top 15 in strokes gained approach. And then he also has an incredible short game. I think he's in the top 20 on the PGA Tour around the green, strokes gained. So like you look at a guy like that and all of a sudden, you know, you start adding more and more of these guys. Like Justin Rose isn't going anywhere for the next 5 years. Louis Oosthuizen is going to be there. Like, you know, like Phil all of a sudden falls down my list to like maybe like the 20th best pick at Augusta.
Yeah. That's a very good way of capturing it, of just how much there now is, how much he would need to beat to get another green jacket. And you know, he's not really contended.
It's not so much about Phil. Like if Phil plays at a high level, like he's going to have a shot, but like, what are the chances of these other 20 guys not playing at a high level? Like there's just so many great players right now that it's hard to imagine all of them, you know, like if Fowler, Spieth, or let's just say, we'll say Spieth, Rory, JT, or DJ really has their A game, Phil has no chance.
Yeah, right.
So like that's like the thing that I think sticks out is like Phil not only has to have his A game, his A plus game, but he also needs these other guys not to play well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think like just, it's easy. It's an easy talking point that he's going to win again, and an easy kind of thing to say he's going to contend forever. But maybe not.
You got anything else you want to hit on here?
No, not really. I mean, it was a fantastic week. My favorite moment was encountering a middle-aged man in a Marvin Harrison jersey, Colts jersey, walking around Augusta. Wasn't a shot, wasn't Spieth's putt on 16. Just this guy in a Marvin Harrison Colts jersey with his rain jacket tied around his waist and some like old school plain New Balances. And I was just thinking like, What's the thought process? What's the thought process in the morning? I'm going to the Masters. I'm going to put on my Colts Marvin Harrison jersey.
That's what I was thinking. Is like, you know, had he had it planned? You know, was it his scripting? It's like,
no,
I'm going to the Masters. This is what I'm wearing because I love this thing.
Well, there was no Marvin Harrison wasn't around. I was just so confused. I was delighted though.
What do you think about Nike putting the kibosh on Reed with the Sunday Rut?
I don't think apparel companies should be. Depends. It depends on who you are. Obviously, they pay these guys a ton of money. This thing's gotten more pub and attention than it deserves. But I think Reed should be allowed to. He's leading the damn Masters, and he should be allowed to wear what he wants.
Augusta made his wife take off her Kapalua hat also and put on an Augusta hat.
Is that true? I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, really? She was like holding her other hat.
Wow. I hadn't heard about that, but that's not surprising. And maybe not the most offensive thing about her Sunday outfit. But
the Reeds were just getting bullied on their apparel. Maybe Patrick will now wear Sunday pink.
Sunday azalea pink.
Yeah, it's it's a thought, you know. It worked. I don't think he's really superstitious though, is he?
No, I don't. I mean, I think the red thing was just an homage to Tiger and he stuck with it.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe he is. Doesn't he use like the old Ryder Cups, a bunch of that stuff, like the yardage book and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, he's I'm really interested to see what happens with Reed after this. I think he's a guy that obviously is, you know, no shortage of confidence, and this thing's going to put him through the moon on it. You know, Patrick Reed might just be becoming a top five player like he proclaimed.
It's good for me, good for content. You know, he's just, I think as he gets better, or you know, as he gets accomplishes more and more and gets more cocky, might lead to some friction or some drama. So it's good for me.
All right, let's do some overrated, underrated.
Yeah,
the 18th hole.
This is your wheelhouse. I think it's overrated. I do, and I'm coming off this pissed off about Spieth getting robbed. If by that overhanging limb, I think it's too narrow and too difficult to make a birdie. I think it's overrated. I find it frustrating, but I'm very, my opinion is colored by watching Spieth's round come undone, Spieth's chase at history come undone there.
I think, I think they just got to do a little tree trimming. It's always been a shoot, yeah, is the one thing. But, you know, obviously they lengthened it and moved that back tee back. So, like, the shoot is a lot different now than it was when it was originally designed. I think I everybody that reads my stuff will know this. I really dislike bunkers on the outside of doglegs.
Yeah, right.
I can't stand them. Now, granted, like, the hole does not play at all the way it should because of, you know, the distance, and you know, nobody expected these guys to be able to hit wedges into a 465 yard hole uphill, but that's what it's become.
So overrated.
Yeah, and then the green's like way smaller than it used to be, but I mean, I think it's a cool, I like the idea of having a hole. The 17th gets a lot of flack, and I think that it should be wider because they planted all these trees, which are bad, and it's negatively. But I like that you have this stretch of birdie holes, like 13, 14, 15, 16 are all gettable. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to be like a drivable par 4 coming in. Like, you gotta, it's a major championship, like, make these guys hit tough golf shots coming in, and 17, 18 do that. So I think they just need to do a little bit of tree work to just give it a, it's so claustrophobic back there.
Yeah, I kind of love watching the 17th green and then bouncing over the 18th tee. I mean, I know, yeah, 17 catches some crap for being, I don't know, just having not a ton of character, but the green is really fun. It's fun to watch approach shots in there and watch them putt on that green.
Yeah, I mean, like last year is a perfect example. Justin Rose hit a bad shot and he found that front bunker and he didn't make, you know, if it's a, you know, gettable hole, like that doesn't happen. He had to hit two good shots. You got to hit two good shots on 17. I mean, Reed, almost the same thing almost happened. Like he hit a really bad approach shot. And I mean, he got a good break by hitting the hole on that, like, 100-foot putt, but we almost saw another bogey there.
Can I just say, you were talking about trees here for a minute. On Wednesday, I had my camera. It's like, I don't know, 10 years old, crappy camera. And about every, I don't know, 20 yards, you're like, give me that camera. And you would start taking pictures of nothing but a tree. Because you were pissed off because they looked too young and they were obviously too new. They just planted them. How long do you think that's been here? You're just taking pictures. I think people were walking by looking at you like you should be in a straitjacket and hauled off. Like you're zooming in on just one specific under a tree, taking pictures of these young trees.
They, you know, one day
people
I might.
Were looking at you like you were insane.
Well, they got dead trees out there.
They do.
They've got like dead maple trees and groves of pine trees. It's like. What? Just cut it down, you know? Like, I don't know.
Zooming in on a tree, everyone else is trying to get these, like, vistas and the usual spots down an Amen Corridor. You're just, like, running into these woods and taking close-ups of a single solitary tree.
It's like you said on Wednesday, everybody's taking pictures of one thing. I'm going to take pictures of completely different things.
Yeah.
Everybody's zigzag.
I just love the looks you were getting as people were like, what's that guy doing? What's he picking a picture of?
Yeah. I mean, people probably thought I was crazy. It's overrated, underrated, Augusta merch.
Again, I'm coming out of this. You know how you're not supposed to wear the t-shirt to the concert, right? You're not supposed to wear like the Rolling Stones tour, you know, t-shirt to the Rolling Stones.
Especially
concert.
That tour.
Yes. Well, that's, yeah, particularly egregious. Why doesn't that apply to golf? Like, the last thing I'm going to wear, I have some Masters thing. Last thing I'm going to wear at the Masters is the Masters stuff. And I don't know. I think it should apply more to golf. It's like going to, you know, a Colts game or an Eagles game and everyone's in their jersey. I don't know. It's just a little bizarre to me. It was too ubiquitous. And so I'm kind of out on Masters merch. But yeah. Again, I'm very biased having come from a week at Augusta National. It's too much. It's too ubiquitous. It's too, I don't know. It's too blasé at this point. And that's kind of crazy for me to say because you can't get it anywhere but the merch shop. But I'm kind of out on Masters gear right now.
You know what gets me is like the jersey thing. It's like people that put on their jersey to watch a game at home. It's like, like, oh, the Blackhawks are playing. Let me go get my Blackhawks jersey out and sit on my couch. Like, that's something that's never clicked in my head. Like, you know, or the Bears are playing. I'm going to go put my Bears jersey on and watch it on my couch. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Like, it's something that really actually bugs me. Like, nobody's around, but I'm putting on this jersey.
That's a valid point. I think people probably spend money on jerseys. It's not a thing you can wear often. And so they put it on to sit on their couch.
Well, you can wear it. You can wear
no sense.
You can wear it to the Masters. You can wear your mark.
You can.
Maybe that's what the guy was doing. He didn't want to wear Masters gear, so he put on his Colts jersey.
He's sticking out. I mean, I applauded him. God, this is so bizarre.
What about Fred Ridley? Overrated, underrated?
I think he's underrated now. I thought, you know. So much of what I kind of my framing of him was about 2013, and the portrayals weren't particularly kind, particularly Alan Shipnuck's breakdown of what happened with Tiger's drop. And it kind of portrayed him as kind of a bumbling rules guy. So I think, you know, the framing of him wasn't the best coming into his chairmanship, but I think he's super underrated. And it's not just the amateur thing, the women's amateur stuff, which makes a ton of sense and everyone seems to be on board with. But I thought he was hit all the right tones. He seemed kind of engaged on the right things. He seemed, so I was watching closed circuit TV of the green jacket ceremony up on the putting green, and Reed, kept calling people fans, like all y'all. And Ridley was right in the shot sitting down behind him. He just looked so pained. He did not look like he wanted to be there anymore. He did not look super happy with Reed's speech. He was looking up at him just like with this like painful grimace on his face. And so I found him amusing, that part amusing, but I think he's underrated. I thought he hit all the right tones and he seems like, could be a good person to be the next chairman.
Yeah. I'm very optimistic with the Fred Ridley era. You know, the hair is just spectacular.
Right.
But beyond that, he asked the best question I've heard post round in Butler Cabin. He asked Reed about his bounce backs. And I mean, this guy is the last guy to win the U.S. amateur that didn't turn pro. It's
right.
I mean, it's exciting to have a guy that really, really gets golf as the chairman. You know, like it's not like just some schmuck member. Like, not saying any Augusta members are schmucks, but like yeah. We aren't talking about like your 15 handicap that's like, oh, you know, this is what I think we should do, that's calling the shots. You know, you got a guy that was a Walker Cup captain, a USAM winner. Like, you got a guy that really, really knows golf, and I'm excited. I think he's going to do some good stuff, and you know, it would be apropos though for him to just disappoint on every level. So that's why I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that was the one thing I took away, is like it's such a change of having a guy with such a golf background and as an excellent player now in control of so many important things that are just the game.
Yeah. All right, last one. Walk up music.
Gosh.
If anybody doesn't know, Zurich Classic announced that it would have walk-up music this year to the first tee.
I think it's incredibly overrated. It's just a dumb window dressing. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm not going to be angry that it's happening, but it's incredibly overrated. It resonates more in the content now than when you actually get there, and it's like it just falls flat every time. No one cares about it. They maybe care about it for the first guy for 5 seconds it plays, and then you forget it's even happening. There's no content, there's nothing funny, there's nothing interesting, there's nothing worthwhile that comes out of it. It's not offensive. I'm fine, like I don't think like the game is gonna be ruined by it, but it's just incredibly overrated. It's like, it's just window dressing of like, oh, we're going to be young and hip and different and cool. And it has no impact on anything, and we should stop talking about it.
Yeah. I would agree with most of your points. I think it does add a great wrinkle to the fan experience for those that get to sit on the first tee. Cause like, it would be way more interesting sitting there, you know? I mean, what is Grayson Murray's walk-up music going to be?
Proud to be an American, Lee Greenwood, I would guess. Like, yeah, I mean, that course is not interesting at all.
I think it gets a bad rap just because it always rains in New Orleans. Like, it's always soft. It's like the tour going to Memphis in August, you know, with a WGC. Like, yeah. You're just setting them up for failure. Like, it is going to be a miserable event. No media wants to go to Memphis in the summer. Like, like nobody wants to go there in the summer. It's going to be hot. It's going to rain. It's going to rain a lot. Like, it's going to be thunderstorms all the time. Like, you're just setting it up for failure. And I know FedEx is the guy, the people that really like write the checks for the tour. So I get right. why it's there. But like, you yeah. can't tell me that the event in Memphis is going to do more for FedEx's sponsorship than if they rotated it around to like 15 great golf courses in the country. Like, that would do so much more for FedEx, because it would have yeah. so much more fan interest and greater interest across the world than playing an event at a garbage golf course in Memphis in August.
People in Northeast Ohio, not happy.
Oh,
I heard about it last few weeks. They're not happy.
Yeah.
About losing the WGC. But I know people have their Firestone takes and I don't disagree with them, but
Nickelback. It's a
community event.
All right, man. Well, we will talk to you soon.
Yeah.
And another Masters in the books. I was a little depressed on Sunday night, realizing that everything's downhill from here.
We'll get out to Shinnecock, right? I mean, we might take a tour around there in June, and we got the Players coming up, so.
Shinny should be fun. That'll be
yeah.
a lot of fun.
We got a good major year coming up. We're just strapping in. It'll be fun.
It's a 3-major year.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
So
I can't wait for the Knives to come out on Bellerive. I'll tell you that, though. That'll be fun.
I don't know. That's another thing. That's another example. Like, St. Louis in August is the worst place in the world. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Later.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.